If I travel before the middle of May, I think it was, to return, it only takes 40,000 miles on American, whereas if you travel after that, it takes 60,000 miles. Well, anyway, the Lord provided those bonus miles and plus the miles I had. And it cost a lot, of course, for the taxes and the security costs now that you didn't used to have. We also had expenses in flying from Romania to Moldova, which was quite high, and then from within Romania to return to Bucharest. But anyway, I called up after the flight was canceled, and well, when is it possible to go? And of course, they didn't really know at that time because, you know, it was a continuing thing about the volcanic ash over in Europe. And many of the, well, I guess all of them in most of the countries were shut down for several days. But some said, well, the following week, and that would have cut the trip almost too short to go. So I kept calling them. You know, it pays to be persistent. The Lord wants us to be persistent, because if we're not persistent, then the adversary will always interfere. So I kept calling, and finally the Lord overruled. I told this lady who answered the phone for American Airlines the purpose of my trip. Well, bless her heart, she found a seat on the plane for me to go to Europe. And so we were able to leave on a Friday. And, of course, I had to cut short several of the visits that I had already planned for those 4.5 days. So on a Friday, we left Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. I arrived in Bucharest, Romania. Well, let me go back to England. I traveled across, and we stopped at London, and I took the large studies in the scriptures to a brother, Martin Safaris. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly or not. But he was associated with the JWs for, I think, 10 years or so, and has left that organization. So he was wanting studies in the scriptures. Oh, by the way, he heard the Divine Plan program, and I was quite surprised that Divine Plan can be heard in many countries in the world by means of satellite. Not too long ago, we made arrangements with the Word Network, which covers by cable many places in the U.S., but also, I think they said, in 200 countries, if they have satellite, they can pick it up. And we know that they can, because we've gotten responses from Italy and from Jamaica and from other countries, I can't think of, as well as England. We've gotten several responses from England. So anyway, I met this brother Martin at the airport, and we had just a short visit there, even though I had gotten in the night before because of the seat I was able to get. It was a long layover there. So I spent the night at the airport, and I guess about 12 hours or so I was there at the airport. But Brother Martin didn't come until Saturday morning, and then he didn't have long to stay, and I had to catch the plane then to go to Bucharest. After, I think 2 or 3 hours at Bucharest, I flew to Chisinau, Moldova. And I could see the Lord's overruling that the flight was changed, the schedule was changed, because I had originally planned to be in the Chisinau area at Censorine, Moldova, during the week. Well, had I been there during the week, all of these young people would probably not have been at the meeting. I was totally surprised that there were so many young people that came to that Sunday morning meeting. And, of course, a lot of them are not consecrated. I don't know, the Lord knows how many are consecrated. But there were a lot of young people there, as well as some of the older brethren. And I must go back to the first time we were there at that home where the meeting is held at Censorine. It was at the home of Brother and Sister Joachim. And Ruth and I had the privilege to go there in 1992 to Moldova. First of all, we had the privilege, after some of the brethren in this country had encouraged us to go to Romania in 1991. So in 1991, Ruth and I went over to Romania for the first time. And then while we were in Cluj, Romania, we met this family from Moldova who visited with the brother and sister Bria, Cornel Bria, and his family. And we got home, and we had an invitation from this family. In those days, you had to have an invitation to go to Moldova. And so it was in the fall of the year, and Sister Betty had come over, and she says, if you will go to Moldova, I'll go and translate for you. You see, in Moldova, they speak Romanian as well as Russian. And so, well, that's all that was needed to have an invitation from the friends in Moldova and then a translator to go. So in the spring of 1992, we went to first to Romania, and then we didn't fly that time from Romania to Moldova. We boarded the train at Cluj at around 9 o'clock on a Friday night. I have never been on a train since then that was so packed. There were so many people on that train that you just could hardly make your way through the aisle. I don't know whether any of you know the way the trains are located, but there's a passageway, and then the compartments where the people sit, you go from this passageway into the compartment. Well, they were just so thick in the aisle as well as in the compartments. In fact, the brethren who went with us from Cluj had not purchased the tickets until we had gone down to the station. Well, they barely got the tickets in time, but they put Ruth and me and Sister Lisa went with us, and we got on the train without any tickets. And the brethren outside waiting and pointed out to the brethren who were buying the tickets where we were. But anyway, finally we met up with each other. The train, you see, was leaving, and those brethren just barely got on. But we traveled that night. The next morning we arrived at Iași, Romania, which is, you know, from 9 o'clock until in the morning. And so then one of the brothers who went with us wasn't consecrated at the time, but he knew of a family there in Iași, and so he took us to this lady's home, and she fed us, and we had a chance to rest a little bit. And then we boarded a train that in those days, I don't know, maybe it's still so, but probably not, but in those days they had to elevate the train in Romania because the wheels were different to go into Moldova, you know, under the communism. They couldn't go across with the same wheels, so they elevated the train. It seemed like we were there eternity before we actually got started. Well, we finally arrived, and we had to take another train, and we finally arrived at the place in Moldova where we were going about 10 o'clock that night. Now, we'd been up traveling, you know, from 9 o'clock on Friday until 9 p.m. on Friday until about 10 o'clock on Saturday night. And, of course, we had to clean up, and we ate, and the time we got to bed, it was quite late. And I said, now, we're going to catch a bus the next morning to go to Edinet to Moldova. That's where the meeting was going to be held. So we got a few hours of sleep, and then we were counting on leaving for the bus station at a certain time. But they came and knocked on the door, and we've got to leave now. And we weren't ready. But we rushed and got down to the bus station in time, and then went over to Edinet. Well, the large room was just packed. You know, they sit close together on benches, and they can get a lot of people in a small space there. So I had, in those days, I had one of the old charts that Chart of the Ages that had been given to me. I don't know how old it was, but it was very, very old. But we put it up, and we explained the truth there at Edinet. Now, in those days, there was no one in Moldova that we know of that thought the door to the high calling was still open. They thought it was closed because they had the volumes, but they didn't have the 1916 forward, so they thought it closed in 1914. And so, well, we went preaching that the door to the high calling is still open. And as a result, that caused trouble. You know, the adversary doesn't like the truth. And it caused trouble. It caused a division. So there was a split about half and half. And about half accepted the fact that the door was still open. And the other half, many of them to this day, still think that it's closed. The door is closed, according to their thinking. But since then, there have been many young people who have accepted the truth there in Moldova. So that was our experience of going to Moldova. Well, finally, I must say, too, that at Edinet, there's a little village called Rusin. Some of you have heard of Rusin, and you've met some of the Nyagu family. You met Brother Villarreal many years ago. Did any of you meet Brother Villarreal? Well, a few of you know. Well, you know, it was so providential that we were invited to spend the night at Edinet on Sunday night. Now, they said, leave your luggage where that we had stayed Saturday night a few hours. We're going to come back here tonight and stay. But we got to Edinet, and they insisted that we spend the night. Well, they found some sleeping clothes, and of all things, they found a Bic razor for me. I don't know what this Bic razor was doing there. You know, one of the little safety Bic razors. So I had a razor, and I had some sleeping clothes. Well, it was so providential. You see, this is the way the Heavenly Father works, because we went the next day to Rusin. Well, they were the brethren there that really started believing that the door was open. And a few years later, I'm not sure how many years later, it was my privilege to assist in the water baptism of Sister Nyagu, the mother of Brother Villarreal. And, there were a lot who were baptized at that same time. And I met some of these on this last trip. But anyway, that's a long story, too. From Rusin, we finally went back to... I can't pronounce the name of the town where the city where that we spent Saturday night, but we went back there and picked up our luggage, and we finally made our way to Censorine. Well, on this trip, you see, my first service was at Censorine there, this home where we first met in 1992. And by the way, it was in May of that year, and with so many people packed into that small area, it was very warm. And you know, we'd been traveling, and up losing sleep and so forth. So there was so much enthusiasm, questions and all. We were close to midnight when we got to Censorine for the meeting. And afterwards, they served a big meal for everybody present. Well, they couldn't decide when we were going to go back to catch the train at Yost. You know, would we spend the rest of the night there? But about 2 o'clock in the morning or so, they decided, well, we'll travel down from Censorine down to Yost to take the train. Well, I hadn't had any sleep, you know, and then they had car trouble on the way down. You know, many, many experiences we could relate on that trip. So anyway, that brings you up to date as to our first visit this time was on that Sunday morning, April the 25th. Well, from April the 25th until May the 9th, there were 26 meetings at 26 locations, and we were at a convention for 2 days. Sunday morning from the south, from Censorine, we immediately got in the car and drove about 3 hours to Rusin. And the brother driving us didn't lose any time driving, you know. So it's a long journey from the south to the north. And so they were already gathered together. They'd been meeting that Sunday. And so then we had a service there on Sunday afternoon. And then some fellowship that Sunday night. And then the next morning, real early, we took we went in a car over to Ukraine. And that's also a long journey to go from Rusyn over to Ukraine. But over the years, I have learned that we can see more brethren if we arrange a schedule proper. And so the brethren are, for the most part, are very considerate. When I say I can be at a place in the morning or in the afternoon or at night, then they forget about all of their work at home and they come to the meeting. And so we had a meeting around noon in Ukraine. And from there, picked up by some Ukrainian brethren. The brethren from Moldova went back home. And so we had a wonderful visit then that night at Ternopil. In Canada, they call it Tarnopol. But in Ukraine, it's Ternopil. And really on my last two visits to Ukraine, I have really appreciated the love and the zeal of the brethren who come to the meetings. But I understand that they have many problems in Ukraine, just like they have many problems in America and Canada and wherever you go. And it shouldn't be that way, but it is. It's a fact, and it's a sign that we're in the harvest time, a time of sifting and sorting and separating. But the brethren that came to the meeting in Ukraine, it was just a real wonderful privilege to be there again. Well, then the next, that was Monday night, Monday noon and Monday night, two meetings in Ukraine. And then the next day we were at Brother Dohan's village, and I always have a hard time remembering how to pronounce his village. But nevertheless, some brethren from different ecclesias had come, and that would have been a Tuesday morning, I guess. And so then we drove down to a long distance to a southern class in Ukraine. Mukachevo, I think, is the way you pronounce that city, and I'm probably butchering the pronunciation. But anyway, there are some rather newly interested brethren there, and they're very zealous. They really are students, and it's always nice to be with them. Well, one of the dear brethren then, I spent the night there. That would have been Tuesday night. So one of the dear brethren drove us, Brother Andrei Lebeda, who translates for me in Ukraine, I said, it's not necessary for you to go that long distance and then back. But he wanted to go with me, because otherwise I wouldn't have had a translator along the way. So anyway, we went there, and there was a brother Iwan, and I don't remember his last name, from Romania, who came across the border at Siget and met me there. And so that was a Wednesday night, and we had a meeting in Siget with the brethren, and I saw Brother Alan Springer there. That's the only time I saw him, was at the Wednesday night meeting there in Siget. And the next morning we had a meeting at Yapa, which is just real close to Siget. And from Yapa we went down to Mara, and it was nice to see the brethren there again. And then the brother Juan drove me for several meetings. He took us over to Negres. So that was, we had a meeting there that night. It was really early night because the distances are not so great as they are in this country, but we went over the mountains, and you know, it takes time, and the roads are not so good in many places. So then that was three meetings we had on, that would have been on Thursday. And then the next day on Friday, I'll have to stop and think, I believe from Negres, we went down to Salamari, and there's some newly interested ones. One's the son of, two of them are sons of brethren, and they're very zealous. Last year when I was there, one of these took his car. He's a truck driver, and he was able to take me to some other meetings, but this time I guess he wasn't able to do so. So let's see, we had a meeting at Salamari, And then from there we went to, that was a Friday, and then we went over to Olchug. Now, Olchug is and Artizel are located in Romania, but actually at one time is a part of Hungary. And those brethren speak Hungarian. And, oh, they're very good students, very, very zealous for the truth, very appreciative, and we really always enjoy being with those Hungarian brethren. They speak, not all of them speak Romanian. On many occasions, we have to have it translated from English into Romanian, from Romanian into Hungarian. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to keep up with the train of your thoughts when it goes through so many translations, but we've learned to do it okay, no problem. And so then that was a Friday afternoon, and I really hadn't expected the brethren at Baimare to meet that night, because they live in town, and some of them don't always get out to meetings like the brethren in the villages do. But I was quite pleased that there were several that got out on Friday night, and so that was three meetings that day also. And by the way, all of these brethren send their love to you. Then the next day, I had the privilege of being in the home of Brother Akeem, Brother and Sister Akeem. I don't know whether you've heard of their name or not, but they have a son and a daughter who both speak English, but they both recently married, and so they're not at home anymore. And so the Akeems have moved into a smaller home, but they're very precious brethren, and they always want me to stay at their home when I go to Romania. In fact, they sometimes will write and say, you know, when are you coming? So we spent a few hours at their home Saturday night and got up early the next morning to drive over to the two-day convention at St. George, Romania. And so it was a short, sweet visit there at the Akeem home. But anyway, I had the privilege of being with them for a little while. And so we got to the convention. And on Saturday, I'm not sure how many brethren, probably over 300 there on Saturday, but then on Sunday I would say there were between 400 and 500. Maybe that's a overestimate, but both sides of the large dining area, we eat in the same area where the meeting is, and the first day on Saturday about half of it was filled up, and on Sunday the hall was really filled up, you know, so there were a lot there for that. And I had the privilege on Saturday of serving the convention with based on Isaiah 61. So then on Sunday night after the convention, well, I was informed ahead of time, now we're going to take the bus down to Cluj. I had arranged to go to Cluj after the convention, and I just figured that I would ride with some of the brethren. But we're going to take the bus. Well, you know, that was something that I didn't realize, that they had chartered a bus for the brethren. And so it was a privilege to be on the bus with the brethren. You know, it wasn't just a bus where you'd have anybody on there. And so it was a real careful driver. And so then, I have to watch my time. I hadn't intended to go into so much detail. But anyway, we were taken to this home that I was to spend several nights in Romania while I was there. Well, the family, the sister is consecrated, but the brother, the husband isn't consecrated. And they have a daughter who is a nurse who also speaks English. But they had gone to some family gathering at that time of the convention. They weren't at the convention, but I was invited to stay at their home. And so the natural sister of this sister was at the convention, and she and Sister Betty got off the bus, and we walked over some distance to their apartment. And of course, the family wasn't there, but they showed me where my room would be. And the family was going to get in around midnight. maybe, I'm not sure, it was quite late that they were to get back home. Well, I went to bed, and for some reason, you know, being there by myself, I locked the door to my bedroom. I don't know why, but I did. And I couldn't unlock the door. And I took a screwdriver, and I took that off, and I still couldn't unlock the door. So I had to stay awake until the family came, and I heard them when they came in, and I told them that I couldn't get outside of my room. That was quite an experience. So anyway, finally, the man of the house unlocked the door. It was hard for him to unlock it too, you know, because that lock just wouldn't unlock. But he's a handyman, and so I thought I'd really cause problems with taking off what I had done. But he fixed it, no problem. He got it fixed, you know, just real fast. And it turned out that he was just very a lovely person, you know. And I just had, through translation, had nice fellowship with him. Just a brief time that I visited, because during the day he was at work and I was at the meeting. And so let's see, now that was on a Monday morning. Let me think where we went Monday morning. I'm offhand, I can't think where we went Monday morning, but we went to Gadolin. We went to Gadolin. And the first time we were at Gadolin, we had the meeting outside under a grapevine arbor. Oh, and I'll never forget that experience there, having the meeting outside under the grapevine. So we went there that morning. I think that was right, Monday morning. And then in the afternoon, okay, that's right. In the afternoon, then we went to Apahita, which is just right close to Cluj, and had a lovely visit there. There were just a few of us, but a few years ago, this sister, you know, wanted to know, well, why don't you come to visit us, you know? So we made a point to try to include that on our schedule. And she would, it was kind of informal, and so she would stop and ask questions, and I think she really, you know, a good student, I think she really appreciated it. And then that night we had a meeting at Cluj, and there was a brother from Poland who spoke, and his message was first translated. And then I served the brethren. So there were two meetings there on Monday night. And the next day, we went down to Tigermers, and then back in the afternoon, a meeting at, I can't think of the place, but there are a lot of sisters there that they dress in black. Most of them, not all, but most of them dress in black. And it's the custom, you know. But there's a large number of them. Nearly the whole village, you know, come to the meeting. And I would assume that not all of them understand what consecration is. But there are some very, very zealous. So we had a nice visit with them. And then Tuesday night, we came back by Sister Natalia is just so hospitable. She has a little apartment. She has an afflicted daughter, but she always wants us to come, and she invites brethren from other places nearby. And so we had a lovely visit there, and then back to Cluj that night to spend the night. Then on Wednesday, we had also three meetings. We went over to a little village, Beka, and you go way down into to the valley, you know, to get there. And all the brethren there were very appreciative of the meeting. There were just a few of them. And then that afternoon, back by Ponichin, and then that night at Finisale, and then back to Cluj for the night. So that would have been Wednesday. And then the next morning, we went to the western part of Romania, and it's a long, hard drive to, I want to say Josana, but that may not be right. But the brethren there perhaps are they're just very zealous for the truth. And one of the young sisters said, you know, they don't have any brothers for an elder. There is one dear old brother, but he's not able to be an elder. But the sister said, you know, from time to time, there are brethren that travel around and they visit. Instead of having a study, I think they give a discourse. And this young sister indicated, you know, they do better just studying. They're studying the volumes, you know. And that's better than just hearing a brother that maybe doesn't understand the truth properly come and speak to them. So it was nice to be there. Well, the next morning, that was on a Thursday. We just had one meeting that day, and the next morning was Friday. And we went to a little village, Surduc. It's out also in western Romania. And I never met the brother. Well, you know, I think I may have met him back in the early 1990s, because we went there one Sunday morning, but he's since passed away. He was one of the brothers you may have read about that was in prison. There were a lot of the brethren there that were in prison during communism. And anyway, his dear wife is still living, and bless her heart, she's had to have one of her legs amputated. But, you know, she's very zealous still. And so that was on Friday morning. Well, then there was a sister from Oradea who was there for the meeting. I don't recall meeting her before, but she drives. That is, she drove out to the village. And she took one of the sisters who had come from... Josana doesn't sound right for that other village, but she went to Oradea, and then she was going to go back. Well, they took me to the airport. They didn't realize that I wanted to be there at the airport early, but I got there and there was no one else. They only had a flight that night, you know. I was there for hours at the airport. And so anyway, and then I took a flight that night to Bucharest. Well, it was rather interesting that there at the little airport, finally people started coming for the flight, and there were several people, and they took us through security. And, oh, it's so difficult to go through security. You have to take off your shoes, your belt, your coat, and they even at some places search you by hand. It's not easy to travel anymore with all of the security. But anyway, there was a young minister, Baptist minister, that was observing me there at this waiting room at the airport in Oradea. But he didn't say anything to me. But I got to Bucharest, and heard me talking to the brother who met me. He came, took two buses to meet me at the airport. And, well, I think some of you know Brother Chrisan, Chris, and his wife Lily. It's her father at Bucharest, but he doesn't understand English. Several years ago, he and his wife were in our home, and they were there at the time of the stock show when we went down to the booth. And he was, you know, couldn't speak English, but he was passing out tracts, and he gives massages. And he was going around to some of the booths and massaging them, you know. I don't know what they thought, but anyway, brother met me at the airport. Well, he overheard the conversation trying to communicate what time I needed to be back early the next morning to catch a plane. And so this Baptist minister came over, and who speaks English, and translated. And so the Romanian brother said, well, where are you going to stay tonight? And, well, he was going to go to a motel or a hotel. And so the brother invited him to his little apartment. They only had one bedroom. And so I slept in the bedroom, and the Baptist minister slept on the couch, and the brother slept on the floor. And so anyway, we got to the airport the next morning, and this Baptist minister took... Oh, by the way, he carried... I think they're on the sixth or seventh floor, you know, up the stairs. You had to walk up. And I had two suitcases plus another little bag. And I didn't have anything but the little bag to carry. And I was so glad, because it's tiresome to try to climb that many stairs up. But anyway... I had a wonderful opportunity to talk the truth to him, you know, and I gave him the first volume, and I thought he would email me, but I emailed him and I haven't heard, so that's probably the end of it. But he was so friendly and so nice, you know. Here, a stranger sleeping at the same apartment, you know, And well, anyway, I caught my plane back, but we got on the plane at I didn't have any problem going to London, but at London we had a wait, and then we got on the plane, everybody got on the plane, and we were 3 hours because there was a scare of more of the volcanic ash, and 3 hours, and then they routed us around, so it was a long journey back across. Well, I arrived in Tirana on a Saturday afternoon and served the brethren there in Tirana on Sunday, a very nice visit with them. And there's a family from Romania by the name of Moss that come to the Tirana meeting. And so they took me to the airport. And bless their hearts, they insisted on coming in and making sure that I got on the flight. And that was so overruled because he looked and the flight has been canceled. Well, I went over to see when I could get the next plane. I was going to have a direct flight from Tirana to DFW, but as it turned out, I was routed by Chicago, and I boarded this little plane, this little tiny plane, not very many passengers on there, you know. And I figured for my seat assignment that I'd have another small plane from Chicago down to Dallas-Fort Worth. But lo and behold, they put me, I guess, in the business section of this large plane, and I've never had that privilege before, you know, reclining back. So, you see, that was all just given to me because this nice person in Tirana made that arrangement. Well, I hadn't intended to spend that much time because I wanted to spend a lot of time on the witnessing part, but some of you have these words of appreciation. We had the internet cut off while I was gone for about a month, and thanks to Sister Eleanor, she took care of the responses by phone and by internet that came. And how many did you mail out? More than 70 first volumes, was it? A large number of first volumes that came even without the internet advertising, you know. And so this shows that during the 2 months we had 825, but that's just about half of what we ordinarily mail out a month. Now this month is going to be cut short because we've been without the 800 number since Monday. And so, you know, there's this recording that call again. And I don't know what the Lord's will is. I know that it'll be overruled. He's at the helm. And our Lord is at the helm. But nevertheless, it's quite a trying experience. I was assured yesterday by a supervisor for AT&T that it'd be on working today. And I called this afternoon, and it still is not working. So the Lord's will be done. But there are reasons why we have these experiences. And if you don't have one of these that I passed out, well, maybe you can read it and then pass it on to someone that hasn't read it. Some of you already have had it. But I am just thrilled at the number of appreciative responses we were getting from the television. You know, years ago, there weren't that many appreciative responses. They did request, but there are so many nice comments that they make. And so we share this with the brethren. We try to once a month, but since I was gone, we combined it for April and May. So we appreciate this privilege. As I said, I perceive that there's still work for me to do, and we want to be faithful. Now, I wanted to share with you a manna text that you read just a few days ago. In fact, this is June the 8th, and I have some of it highlighted in my manna here, so perhaps you'll want to highlight it too. He which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. James 5:20. The comments, when we see others walking in forbidden paths in the way of transgressors, we are not to follow them there in order to help them out, but to show them the right path by keeping in it and calling to them. When we see some confusing themselves with doctrines and teachings of men, which we know are fundamentally wrong, we are not to wade through those doctrines in order to help them out, but we are to remind them that the study of any doctrine which will not square with the foundation is not only a misuse of consecrated time, but that all trifling with that which we know to be error is wrong and dangerous, as all violations of conscience and principle are dangerous. And, brethren, we're in the hour of temptation in which there are many false doctrines out there. The adversary is trying to stop the completion of the little flock. He is bruising the heel members, the very last members, but he will not succeed. And we'd like to use an illustration. You know, I got this idea from Brother Morehouse and Brother Sumbaum and others of those dear ones of the past who were good teachers in the truth. And, you know, you remember those illustrations. And even though I learned that in Romania that one of my illustrations I gave was not appreciated, I don't know by how many. I think it was mainly by some visiting brethren from other countries, but it was at a convention. But nevertheless, I'm not going to stop using illustrations because I know this is something you will remember. And, we're told by Jesus that ye are the light of the world. Is that right? Now, if we see others walking disorderly or false accusers or, they're just not living a consecrated life and they're endorsing false teachings for the sake of fellowship, well, brethren, that will lead to us hiding our light. If we're sympathetic with the wrong, if we're sympathetic with unrighteousness, what will happen to the light? If the light which is in thee becomes darkness, how great is that darkness? Now, ye are the light of the world. I realize that it's not a popular message today to be straightforward in our responsibilities of presenting the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Because there's a tendency today to ignore these things just for the sake of fellowship. But we are not to hide something that is wrong. We're not to cover it up. Because if the light which is in thee become darkness, how great is that darkness? And so I hope you'll remember this illustration of the importance of letting our light shine. For what purpose? That our Father might be glorified. I perceive that from these words of appreciation that there are still many people who are appreciative of the truth when they hear it. I realize that most of these will not be invited to the high calling because we think the little flock is almost complete. Some of them from time to time are invited, like Sister Mary is a good example. Not many are invited to the high calling, but one here and one there. And brethren, there's still work to do. The work of harvest did not end in 1914. The harvest still continues. And we might even emphasize that the kingdom work continues. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from henceforth. We believe that's 1878 and onward. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works do follow them. You see, without the laborious efforts. So, brethren, there is kingdom work to do. And each one has the privilege of doing his or her part. Don't let us become so involved in luxuries of this earth, of accumulating something for our retirement, because, you know, we don't know when we might die. When I went to the barber shop this week, I have been using this barber for many, many years. It was just a month younger than I, about the same age. And I said, well, where's Joe? Well, he passed away on May the 2nd while I was in Europe. So you see, brethren, we don't know just when we might finish our earthly course. But let us do now with our might what our hands find to do. And never, never hide our light under a bushel. May the Lord overrule anything that was said amiss. But we've said it from the heart with love. And we want to encourage each one. You know, our dear brother Morehouse used to encourage the brethren to be more than overcomers. I can just remember him in his old age, you know, how that he made a special effort to come down, he and Sister Morehouse, to serve the brethren in Texas. And, you know, he was rather feeble at that time, but he was encouraging the brethren to faithfulness. And I remember his sermon on Stephen preaches a sermon. And so, brethren, let us be zealous in sharing the truth with the meek, not with the proud. It's not time for the proud. But with the meek, and if we are faithful now in letting our light shine, we will have the privilege of judging the world. And it's going to be a gigantic work. In my dealing with the telephone company and with other places, the other individual, I realize what a groaning creation it is. And it's not going to be an easy job of judging the world. But remember, we are to judge the world in righteousness. And now if we cover up something that is wrong and endorse it, how can we be a righteous judge? Well, may the Lord add his blessing.